Good morning to you. How are you this Sunday morning, the 8th of November 2020? I'm in fine fettle myself. Lovely weekend. Hope yours is going well. This is Sunday View. Going to do what we do on Sunday View. Have a look through the papers and also eavesdrop on the UK's most well-known political talk shows. That's what I've been doing this morning. Thanks for joining me and join in as usual on Twitter.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's how you send me a message, a greeting, some criticism, or maybe just express your opinion on what's been going on. All right then. Right, well, this will be the last Sunday View for the foreseeable future. Now, children, yes, that means you. What's happened to people in recent years that we've lost our ability to properly read something, anything, an article, a book, I don't know, a sheet of paper with some words on it, or even a Facebook post? What's all this nonsense about, oh, well, you need some time off, Richie, we'll miss you, and thanks for what you do. Why don't you read word for word what people post? Are you incapable of doing that? I'm not going anywhere at all. I will continue to do the exact same amount of work as I have been doing for many years now. I'm giving up Sunday View because it's a pain in my rectum. It's a pain in the arse. It's become a dreadful, boring pain for me in recent weeks and months because of the virus. Okay? And it's become monotonous to read the papers every Sunday morning and be confronted with virus stuff. So I said that what I would do would scrap this programme and launch a brand new programme in its place on Friday afternoons. A bit of crack. We'll have a bit of crack, me and you. Right? On a Friday. And the programme will be around about 90 minutes to 2 hours long, depending. So there'll be more work in it. Monday to Thursday doesn't change. I'm just leaving Sunday and moving to Friday instead. I thought I was pretty clear about that. But some of you, you need to have a word with yourselves. Read something to the end, right to the end, and then read it again. Until you've gotten it into your skulls, right. So that's how it's going to be. It'll be around 3 p.m. on Friday afternoons from this coming Friday, and it will replace Sunday View for the foreseeable future. Do you understand? And I posted to Facebook about this yesterday, and I thought I was pretty clear, but apparently not. Anyway, I'm in great form. I'm jesting. But, dude, it is a problem with people, isn't it, in this day and age? Not just writing, not just reading the written word, but even listening. People tend to listen to a fifth or a third or a sixth of what they're being told and then run away. Hang on. Listen to the whole thing. Anyway, good job. Right, before we talk Joe Biden, yes, and before we look at how the UK media is covering and reporting on the US election, we'll have a tune. And all of the tunes this morning, well, the titles of the songs and the content of some of the songs, they've got a US election theme running through them. I felt like kicking off with a bit of Gladys Knight and the Pips. What do you reckon? Gladys Knight. On Sunday View for the last time. With me, the BBG. Good morning. Welcome to your Sunday View. Lots to talk about today. Gladys Knight and the Pips leaving Midnight Train to Georgia, yeah. Jean Ann tells me she's chasing hens around her kitchen in Cleggan there in the west of Ireland. That sounds idyllic, that, doesn't it? What a lovely rural rustic scene that is. Chasing rescue hens around your kitchen. Gotta love that. I do. I think it's absolutely marvellous. Drop your tweets to me. Let's get straight into the headlines. The Sunday Telegraph. It's time for America to heal, is the headline. picture of Creepy Joe there, looking like he's constipated. Have you seen the front page of the Sunday Telegraph? Go to bbc.co.uk/news and you can see the headlines and the photographs of those newspapers. He looks like he's constipated. Not a great picture of the president-elect Creepy Joe. Sunday People, God bless America. Yes, the front page features, again, the president-elect and his running mate Kamala Harris. Is it Kamala or Kamala? Who cares? And US President Donald Trump. Apparently, the Donald was playing golf as Mr. Biden's win was announced. Yeah, he was playing golf. What do I get? 4 more years? No, Donald, your ball is heading for the car park. Sunday Times headline, Sleepy Joe wakes up America. Sure he does. Sunday Mirror, time to heal. Yes, Sunday Express, unite and heal. Sunday Express also has a picture of the Queen at the tomb of the unknown warrior. Yes. The Observer headline is, it's Joe. They're delighted, of course, The Observer, which is the Guardian's Sunday newspaper, delighted that Joe has been declared, well, not officially declared, but he's declared that he is the president-elect. Not a lot of love for Joe Biden on the front page of the Star on Sunday today. The headline is, this is wonderful, told ya, old fart wins election. The senile one beats the lunatic one. Yeah, do you want to hear the old fart? Why not? Here is Joe Biden. You're, if you're in the US, next president.
Folks, the people of this nation have spoken. They've delivered us a clear victory, a convincing victory, a victory for we the people. We've won with the most votes ever cast on a presidential ticket in the history of the nation. 74 million. What I must admit has surprised me. Tonight, we're seeing all over this nation, all cities and all parts of the country, indeed across the world, an outpouring of joy, of hope, renewed faith in tomorrow, bring a better day. And I'm humbled by the trust and confidence you've placed in me. I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify. Who doesn't see red states and blue states, only sees the United States. And work with all my heart, with the confidence of the whole people, to win the confidence of all of you.
Yeah, yeah. He'll be in a nursing home by the spring. There he is. There he is. And I can tell you, he didn't know where he was. He hadn't a clue what time it was or what colour underpants he had on. He's not compos mentis, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, damn. Does it really? None of the papers reporting on Trump's claim that he was robbed, at least not in any great detail, though. Mad scenes on Sky News. Did you see, I don't know if you've been watching Sky News today, they've got two or three reporters dotted around, well, they've got more than two or three, they've got reporters dotted around different states. And it is mad to me to see men and women, now, not exclusively Donald Trump supporters, I don't think, but also Biden supporters, walking around the streets with semi-automatic weapons, wearing military fatigue clothing. Have you seen this stuff? I mean, this is basket case stuff, isn't it? Isn't it? Isn't it, I asked you? Crazy to me to see that. Citizens walking around armed to the teeth, having casual conversations with Sky News reporters, saying that they're out to defend freedom and democracy. It's a basket case. And none of it is coincidental. All of this has been designed, in my opinion. The Mail on Sunday, then, is the only paper not leading with the US election on front page, on page numero uno, strangely enough. Its headline is, Minister's Mobile Searched in Chatty Rat Hunt. What the hell is that about? You might ask. This is about the leak. The leak that bounced Boris Johnson into lockdown 2.0. Right? Right? It apparently happened last Friday week. Yes. Last Friday week, the day before Johnson announced the second lockdown, he had a meeting with Michael Gove. He had a meeting with Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, and also in that meeting was Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary. And one of them, let's presume it isn't Johnson, one of the other three leaked to the paper, leaked to the papers even, the advice that was being given to the government by Sage. We need to find the mole, and that's the story on the front page of the Mail on Sunday. Here's BBC journalist Nick Watt explaining this to Andrew Marr.
That's right, look at that headline there. Minister's mobile search in chatty rat hunt, and this is the leak that came out last weekend suggesting that there were going to be serious national measures in England because of a rising infection rate. And there's a concern that this came from within the cabinet. Now, you and I, we remember, yes, Minister, a launch for a mole is launched and nothing ever comes of it, but we live in the digital era.
So something may come of it.
Two cabinet ministers. His phone's being looked at. And remember when there was the leak of the Huawei, the former cabinet secretary satisfied himself that Gavin Williams had done that, something he didn't.
Maybe they were using telephone boxes.
Maybe they were using telephone boxes, says Andrew Marr. You'd have to imagine Michael Gove, as slimy as Michael Gove is, he's unlikely to be that stupid to use his government phone. Now, Matt Hancock, on the other hand, is as thick as two planks, isn't he? The health secretary. Right? Needs to take out his lad to count to 11, we would have said. So it could be Hancock. The only way to deal with it is to get in the irrepressible Chief Wiggum.
Did you do it?
That's it. Get him in. Did you do it? Who did it? Who leaked? Does it matter? Okay. Right, let's move on. More reaction on the election. The Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab was on the Andrew Marr show. Marr, first of all, asked him, was he okay? Because the Foreign Secretary is self-isolating, apparently. So, are you okay, Foreign Secretary?
I'm absolutely fine. I don't have any symptoms, let alone coronavirus. But I was in contact with someone who tested positive. And, of course, the first thing I did was self-isolate and make sure, as we urge everyone else to do, to follow the rules very clearly and consistently.
I mean, again, are you okay? Are you personally okay? And he says, nothing wrong with me. I don't have coronavirus, but I'm isolating anyway.
I'm absolutely fine. I don't have any symptoms, let alone coronavirus. But I was in contact with someone who tested positive. And of course, the first thing I did was self-isolate and make sure, as we urge everyone else to do, to follow the rules very clearly and consistently.
Anyway.
Were these American elections a completely legal and fair process?
Were they? Good question. Was the election legitimate? Or was the Donald robbed?
Yes.
Well,
but we've always said. I think they were. There may be contested claims of irregularities, but we've always said we've got full faith in the checks and balances of the American system to reach a clear result. They've done that now. Joe Biden is president-elect with the most votes in U.S. Democratic history. Kamala Harris, vice president-elect, first Black woman to hold that office. We warmly congratulate them. We look forward to working with the new administration.
Part of the reason I ask, Mr. Raab, is that you tweeted immediately after the result, while some of the processes are still playing out, it's now clear Joe Biden has won. What processes were you talking about?
Well, there's still recounts. There's still legal challenges. We recognise those. We want to respect the integrity of the US system. But the result's very clear now. And we warmly welcome and congratulate President-elect Biden, Vice-President-elect Harris. And I think as you go through, particularly if you're the government, you've got to tread carefully and sensitively and not risk being perceived to be interfering in either the campaign or the aftermath and the accountability around that. So we're just trying to make sure we are sensitive and respect the American system as we would expect in our elections.
Yes, we're just trying to be respectful and respect their processes as we would expect them to be respectful of ours, right? But you do expect that Biden is the president, pressed Andrew Marr.
Absolutely, and those processes will play out, and I'm sure that they'll be resolved because the US system has the checks and balances in place. So it's simply a factual reflection on the fact that those processes are ongoing, but that there is now a very clear result, as we've always said that the US system would produce. I think you're reading a little bit too much into it, Andrew, if I may say.
Well, let me read you out another tweet, not from you, but from President Trump himself. He said overnight, the observers were not allowed into the counting rooms. I won the election, got 71 million legal votes. Bad things happened. What's your message to him?
Well, look, as I said, and it goes back to your first question, I'm not getting dragged in either to the election campaign or the immediate aftermath. We want to avoid getting sucked into the domestic US politics. But it's very clear now, in our view, that there is a definitive result. We look forward to working with the new administration and we're all eyes on that. I'm sure Donald Trump and his team will consider exactly what they want to do in the days ahead. Obviously, it's not till mid-December that the Electoral College system formally announces its results and formally declares. It's a little bit different from the system in the UK, but I'm sure his team will reflect on where they lie.
And of course, he went on to talk about the special relationship and all of that cliched garbage, didn't he? I wouldn't presume to bore you to death with that. Now, over to Sophie Ridge on Sky, the former Shadow Foreign Secretary Emily Thornberry was on with Ridge. She never liked the Donald point that Ridge made here.
You, of course, haven't exactly held back with your remarks about Donald Trump in the past. You've described him as racist, as a sexual predator. You said he should be treated like a bully. I mean, it's not the most diplomatic.
An asteroid of awfulness, I think, which was turned into a cartoon in the United States. Yes, well, that's what he is. And I have personally always thought that the government had a choice when he was elected. They could have spent their time holding his hand and sucking up to him and hoping to get something, some crumbs from the table. And how has that worked? We have got nothing from that. You know, we haven't got... I mean, they're still putting tariffs on whiskey, you know, because of a long-standing dispute on aircraft. You know, we're supposed to be doing a trade deal and yet we can't even get these punitive tariffs off. We can't even get the killer of poor Harry Dunn, you know, back to Britain in order to face our justice. You know, all of these things... You know, the Prime Minister has gone personally to his good friend Donald Trump and asked for these things.
Why do you
have
think
got
he's
nothing.
A good friend? And why do you think the government sucked up to him?
Well, I think
What's
they
the
thought.
For that?
I think they thought.
Virginia, what is the evidence for that?
What, that they sucked up to him?
And that they were good friends.
Well, they held his hand. You know, the Prime Minister held his hand on a number of occasions. Previous Prime Minister.
Yeah, she's talking about Theresa May there. Apparently, Donald has vertigo, doesn't he? Is it Donald allegedly has vertigo? Correct me if I'm wrong now. I'm not saying that as a fact, but I think when he was photographed and filmed holding Theresa May's hand, walking onto the lawn from the White House, I think it's to do with him being a bit unsteady on his feet. At the time, I thought he might have been pissed, but then I was quickly reminded that Donald Trump is a teetotal. He doesn't imbibe. Neither were some I didn't like about him. Anyway, yeah, that's what it was about.
Minister, we've seen the way in which they have never criticised. They have never said that they disagreed with him. Even during the election itself, we've heard them being mealy-mouthed and not standing up.
But isn't that it's a democratic election, isn't it?
Yes.
You wouldn't expect people to be criticising a candidate while a democratic election is going on with
one of our
most important allies. Also, if you look at, for example, in policy terms. You know, there's quite a lot of clear water between Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, isn't there, on things like trade, on things like Iran, on things like climate change?
OK, so where do you want me to start? So let's start with, yes, I understand during an election, you know, it would be wrong for foreign powers to be intervening, for heaven's sake, but once the election has finished and once the votes are being counted and you have the President of the United States saying that the vote is not legitimate, then I think that our Prime Minister should have stood up, along with the German Foreign Minister, along with the Irish Prime Minister, I mean, all kinds of international figures, and said, this is not the behaviour that we expect. This is wrong.
Now, one more commentator on this in a second. I do realise lots and lots and lots of tweets are coming in. Thank you for them. Asking me, some of you asking me about my opinion on whether there was any rigging. I can only opine. I have no idea. I'll give an opinion in a moment. Good morning, Joe Public. Good morning, Dean. Dean Smith, how you doing, Dean? Dr. Alan McManus, not the snooker player. Hi to David Stanford. I'll read out some of your comments a bit later on. Hi to Gail as well. Before we move on from this to a degree. Let's hear from Mary Jordan. If you read the papers as much as I do, you'll know that Mary Jordan writes for the Washington Post. She's a former Pulitzer Prize winner. She was on the Andrew Marr show this morning, and she had this to say about the events of the last 24 hours and the last few weeks.
The scene right around the White House kind of says it all. Morning, noon, and night now, there are thousands of people, Biden supporters, with signs saying, you know, go home. At last, we're taking back our country. So if you're Donald Trump or Melania, you're looking out the window and you know that a lot of people don't like you. And inside the White House, there's a divide, because the longer Donald Trump does not concede, you know, keeps saying, I won, keeps, you know, saying that this is all a fraud, some of his supporters absolutely love it. But the rest of the country thinks it's destructive, destroying the country. So he's got to decide in the next few days how he's going to play this. And of course, Donald Trump is always going to do what's good for Donald Trump. And, you know, many people think he's going to continue because it's going to make him some, you know, he's going to continue making trouble because he sees that as, in the long run, maybe making money for him, because he will continue to solidify his base.
I suppose one of the big difficult choices for him is he thinking mostly about Donald Trump going forward and Donald Trump's emotions, or about the Republican Party, because he could have a huge influence on the Republican Party going forward. The Republicans really did quite well in these elections. And if he doesn't alienate senior Republicans by his behaviour in the next few weeks, he could still be a very, very big figure in the party going forward for years to come.
Well, it's really the Trump Party. You know, there is a divide. So there's the Republican Party and then there's Trumpism. Donald Trump is going to be a force for a long time. He is his own media company, and he says that. He has 88 million Twitter followers. He has a direct spigot out. Many people think he could start kind of the new Fox TV. It'll be Trump TV. He could be the head of the network. He could be the new Murdoch. You know, he's weighing all kinds of options right now. And of course, we all know that top of mind for Donald Trump is how he's going to make money, how he's going to use his brand going forward. Some of his kids are talking about putting motels, Trump motels, in Trump country. You know, there's half of this country that voted for him. And so he's still very popular. So I think we're going to see that Trump name for a long time.
If there's any legitimacy to the ballots and to the counting of them, and I said a million times over the years, it doesn't matter, in my opinion. If there is any legitimacy, Trump has got the second highest vote tally in US electoral history. He's not going anywhere. And however forlorn he may have looked when he was photographed yesterday coming back to the White House, the head was down. Secretly, Trump is probably delighted. Going nowhere. His own network. If not his own network, his own show on Fox. InfoWars, maybe. I joke when I say InfoWars. Was it suspicious? I don't know. It doesn't matter a damn whether it was suspicious or not. And I'll tell you why. Because if it was rigged, it was rigged by the very same crowd that gave us the Donald and Barack and W and Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. The same crowd. And I'll tell you what depresses me. At 26 minutes and 30 seconds after 11, I'll tell you what depresses me. To see folks whom I've gotten to know over the years, and they are many, they are legion, delighted, expressing their delight on Twitter and on Facebook that Trump has gone. Have they learned nothing? These people talk a good game, but when it comes down to it, they catch themselves out. Oh yeah, I get you, Richie. Yeah, it doesn't matter. You're right, Richie. And yet they're screaming from the rooftops. They're delighted that Trump has gone. Why? What difference does it make? That agenda that we talk about, the only thing in town, the only story in town, the only legitimate story in town, is the Great Reset, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, the transformation of human existence. That agenda didn't slow down under Donald Trump. It accelerated. And it'll accelerate again under the presidency of Joe Biden. Surely you know this by now. What is it? Is it narcissism? Is it? Have we become that stupefied, that high on the stink of our own narcissism, that we can't look in the mirror and say, Jesus, I'm wrong, or I didn't really understand what was going on. No, we seem to get more and more entrenched and more polarised. And I'll tell you, I'll say now, and I won't get into it in any great detail, because I've done this too many times. Donald Trump was handed, gift-wrapped to the American people. Why? Because the elite, whatever it is, in whatever form it manifests, knew how dangerous it was in the previous 20 years that more and more people were becoming disenfranchised, were becoming disillusioned, and were waking up to the reality that elections never mattered and never fucking will. Ever. The elite knew this. The independent media leading up to 2014, 2015 had done an incredibly good job in revealing the system in all of its glory, in all of its horror. And the elites went, shit, they're waking up to it. So they gave the world a reality television president. And we saw with the record numbers turning out, not only in the election in the United States, right, but in elections all over Europe. This is what kills me. Turnout is up all over the effing world. People are turning back towards it. They're tuning back into it. It's astonishing. The establishment says, here's two arseholes. Sometimes we will push you in the direction of voting for one particular arsehole, but generally we don't care who you vote for because the House always wins. We always win. What is it with Trump supporters? What of any of the pledges, which of any of the pledges made by Donald Trump in the run-up to the 2016 election, how many of them has the man honoured? None. None. And people can't say, oh shit, we were duped. Because we've been mind-fucked by social media, haven't we? We've been turned into automatons. We've been turned into horrible people who believe that what we feel about anything is all that matters. Facts don't matter a damn. Just how we emote and how we feel. And we surround ourselves with people who feel just the same as we do. And we obliterate from our field of vision anything which doesn't go along with our own worldview. We don't tolerate the other side. That's what's happened. Trump supporters, maniacs. What did he do in the 4 years he was in the White House? What of those amazing pledges? How many of them? Those wonderful things he said he would do, did he actually do? None of them. He was going to go after crooked Hillary and her mass murdering husband. Wasn't he? Going to put him in jail, going to get a special prosecutor. Day one, what about Hillary? Oh, they're very good people. Got to wake up, people, you know. We went backwards with Trump. The elite. Trump was a masterstroke of the elite. A masterstroke. Wonderful. Everybody fell for it. Everybody. Except me. Because I'm not stupid. The BBG is certainly not at the top of the tree when it comes to brains. But I ain't thick. Dweller on the Threshold. Van Morrison on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Live from Salford here. In the northwest of the UK. Decent day, I think it is. I was out early with the doggies. I think it's a decent day. Hi to my pal, Fiona Marie Flanagan in Bolia O'Haclia. How you doing, Fiona? Hi to Charlie. How you doing, Charlie? Hi to Patrick. Patrick clings on to the idea that Donald Trump might have stalled the progress and helped some people realise what is going on regarding the agendas. No. But Patrick, you're entitled to your opinion and I just read it out. No is the answer. No, 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 no. Right, okay, we're going to do this. Then we're going to come back. Lots to talk about, including vaccines.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Now, I've got a very good friend in Florida called Phil Restino. He's a great guy. Phil disagrees with me. Donald Trump would end the lockdowns and this face mask bullshit and let the children go back to the schools. I believe that, Richie, says Phil. Where is the evidence? Where's the evidence? Can somebody show me any evidence? Apart from things that Trump tweeted out, apart from some of the things that Trump did in his wretched interviews with Sean Hannity on Fox News, can somebody show me some actual evidence that Donald Trump represented a genuine stumbling block against this lockdown mask agenda? Because he didn't. I don't care that he didn't wear a mask himself. Where's the evidence? Where was the executive order from Trump? Where was the executive order? Well, there was none forthcoming, is my point. And I'm sticking to my point. But I will read out all dissenting messages, of course, as I go along. Now, let's do this. This is important. I want to read you some of a letter which I happened upon, because of Toby Young, who's a well-known conservative commentator here in the UK. Toby Young. Marmite, I think you could say, Toby. I don't mind him. I take or leave any of these people. But Toby Young is running lockdownskeptics.org, right? Right, okay. Let's talk about that for a moment. Right, so as you know, there is a pilot scheme, a trial, taking place in the great city of Liverpool at the moment. The government wants to test the entire population of Liverpool, which is about 500,000 people. It wants to test 500,000 Liverpoolians regularly as part of the so-called moonshot plans. You see, ultimately, this psychotic government wants every one of us to subject ourselves to regular testing for the rest of our lives. The results then to determine whether you can go here, there, everywhere, or nowhere. Mental. Mental, this. So Liverpool has agreed, I can't believe it, there shouldn't be any more Tory-hating city in the world, let alone in the UK, than Liverpool. And Liverpool has damn good reason not to have any time for the Conservative Party. But anyway. I lied and told her I loved her. She didn't care. But anyway, here is a letter. Broad Green International School, the head teacher of Broad Green International School, sent a letter out to the parents of the pupils there. Shall I read it for you? You might think this is a joke, but it isn't. Mrs. P. Towie, or Towie, is the head teacher. Ah, she wrote this. Dear parents, carers, as you may be aware, Liverpool is in Tier 3 COVID-19 safeguarding arrangements. It's actually not Tier 3, it's full lockdown now. As part of this process, central government has identified Liverpool to pilot a new COVID-19 testing system. Just told you about that. This is being called the lateral flow system. I am pleased to inform you that we at Broad Green International School are in the privileged position of being one of the first schools within the city to have the testing brought to our site. Wait for it. The head teacher continues. I have met this afternoon with representatives of the British Army who will be in school next week to COVID-19 test all our students and staff. Each child and adult will be identified with a unique barcode to ensure personal identification of tests and subsequent results. Results will be distributed to students and staff as soon as we are in receipt of them. If positive results are received, the school will secure the individual concerned. And in case of students, inform parents, carer immediately. We will then operate our usual process of identifying others who may have been in close or direct contact for our self-isolation system. And that will be put in place. Yeah. Under normal circumstances, parental permission is sought for the testing of children. However, under these very challenging and unprecedented circumstances, that is impossible. Therefore, we would ask that if you wish to exclude your child from this test, please do so in writing to me first thing on Monday. But if you don't, the army. That's where we are. The army will be in the school to test all of our students and staff, barcodes for the kids, to give them a personal ID. And we will secure any child who tests positive and so on, so on, so on. You might think it's a wind-up. You might think it's a joke. But it's true. It's reality in 2020. So then, General Sir Nick Carter, Chief of the Defence Staff, if you please, did the media this morning. And on the Andrew Ridge, that's like Caroline and Starsky and Lacey. What the fuck? On the Andrew Marr show. Andrew Ridge, you see. It always comes back to haunt you when you take the piss out of the missus. On the Andrew Marr show, General Sir Nick Carter, Chief of the Defence Staff, was interviewed. He wasn't interviewed, oh Jesus Christ almighty, Richie. Let's start again. I'm sober, I promise you. He was on Ridge. He was on Sophie Ridge. This guy, the Chief of the Defence Staff, was on Ridge. But he was interviewed by Deborah Haynes, who's a colleague of Sophie Ridge. And he was interviewed on the Army and COVID-19. So Deborah Haynes, on Sky News, on behalf of Sophie Ridge, asked this guy, the Chief of the Defence Staff, is the government more willing to use the Army in the second wave? Because the government seemed reluctant to use the Army in the first wave. General Sir Nick Carter, here's his answer.
I don't think the government was in any way reluctant to use the armed forces. I think it's always a question about what the armed forces can do. And of course, over the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of times that the armed forces have been deployed in support of the civil authority, whether it was the 2012 Olympics, which you'll remember. But equally, there's been a lot of bad weather over the course of the last 10 years, and often we're deployed in support of flooding. Now, I don't think the government has ever felt that it was inappropriate to do that, or indeed that it showed that things had gone wrong. I mean, the answer is that the armed forces are there to provide that level of national resilience. So I don't think there was any reluctance to use the armed forces. I think, like all these things, it's about working out how you can use the armed forces in the most effective way. And actually, I've been hugely proud of what we've contributed. You know, we've done it behind the scenes. We've been supporting the health workers on the front line, and we've applied some quite imaginative ideas to how we can help them. And I think what we did with constructing the Nightingale hospitals, which sadly look like they'll be back in use again, what we've done in terms of some quite imaginative work in the testing programme, and indeed what we did to deliver PPE, the personal protection equipment, at scale, all of that, I think, are indications of how the armed forces can turn their hands to most things when they're required to as part of that national resilience.
As part of the national resilience, the army can turn its hand to whatever it's required to do. Let's hear a bit more from this guy, Nick Carter, Chief of the Defence Staff.
I mean, we've been told by the Defence Secretary that there are 7,500 military personnel ready as part of this winter defence force. Can you imagine all of them potentially having to be used over the coming months?
Well, of course, we always aim off for contingencies, we're aiming off for all sorts of things that might happen this winter, not least bad weather. So the answer is I don't know, but we are prepared for whatever eventuality might happen. And of course, we're about to deploy 2,000 or so people up to Liverpool to take part in this multi-testing pilot scheme that's underway. And I suspect that if that works successfully, we might find that there are other areas where we need to help in a similar sort of fashion.
So test and trace...
Stop, you useless fucker of a presenter. Stop. Why are presenters so bad? The next question is, like what? Like what is the next question?
...in this multi-testing pilot scheme that's underway. And I suspect that if that works successfully, we might find that there are other areas where we need to help in a similar sort of fashion.
Other areas where we might be able to help in a sinister... Excuse me. Yes, sinister is right. In a similar fashion. There are other areas where we can help in a similar fashion. The blonde airhead conducting the interview must say, like what, Nick? Like what? Like policing? But she doesn't. Because she's fucking useless.
Fashion.
So test and trace, it's a key, fundamentally, a big logistical challenge. I mean, isn't that exactly what the armed forces are designed to be able to achieve? Wouldn't it make much more sense just to give that whole piece of important work to the military and let them run the command and control and run that test and trace programme?
You are living in a never-ending episode of Black Mirror. Oh my God, here you have a journalist in inverted commas asking the chief of the defence staff, isn't it just better to turn the whole feckin' thing over to the army? Isn't it, Nick? Hey? Hey? What do you think Nick says, huh?
Well, I mean, it is an option, but I think at the
moment... It's an option.
...the moment we should have confidence in the testing system. I mean, when you think back in May... We were only able to do 10,000 tests a day. We're now doing 500,000 tests a day. And that is on a very steep path at the moment. And I think actually the testing thing has been a really impressive effort. The trace thing is another matter altogether, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily a military task. Of course, we'll step up to the plate if we're invited to do it, but...
Ah, I'm not sure the tracing is necessarily a military task. That's chasing people, by the way, to make sure they stay indoors. But if we're asked to do it...
...and tests a day, and that is on a very steep path at the...
Listen.
...path at the moment. And I think actually the testing thing has been a really impressive effort. The trace thing is another matter altogether, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily a military task. Of course, we'll step up to the plate if we're invited to do it, but...
Yeah, of course you will.
I've got confidence in the system at the moment.
But you say it's an option. Like, have you ever offered the military up to be this solution to help the country deal with the challenge of having an effective testing programme?
I think we've always been clear in defence that we're available, and the government's always known we are. Ultimately, you want sustainable solutions. And what we must never lose sight of course, is that our principal purpose is to deter the country's enemies. And we do that on an ongoing basis. And whilst it is entirely appropriate for us to help in times of crisis, what the government really needs are sustainable solutions so that we're available to do what we should be doing on a normal daily basis.
This is the reality. This is the reality. And it has been predicted by many, many, many men and women for many years. This is where it's going. A test and trace system. Forget the mealy-mouthed responses of Nick Carter. This is where it's going to go. Where the army will take over the testing of the civilian population and the tracing or chasing of those deemed to have failed a test or deemed to have bumped into somebody who failed a test. Not going to over-egg that. There's very little I can say to that about that that you don't understand. More from him in a moment, because he then ran from one studio to another. He went on the Andrew Marr show then. Here's a very important article in the Mail on Sunday. It's also covered in the Telegraph. It's COVID related. Official data is exaggerating the risk of COVID and talk of a second wave is misleading. 500 academics tell Boris Johnson in open letter attacking lockdown. Yes, surprise, surprise. We've hundreds more academics coming out saying the data is misleading. It's being exaggerated. There isn't a second wave. Hundreds of them coming forward in this letter to the government. Let me read some of this in the Mail on Sunday. As the doctors and scientists said, the government's response to the coronavirus pandemic has become disproportionate and that mass testing has distorted the risk of the virus. Wait for it. 500 plus academics and doctors have said tests are likely to be producing high numbers of false positive results and that the government must do more to put infection and death rates within the context of normal seasonal rates. The letter criticised the government's handling of coronavirus, saying it's causing more harm than good. These scientists said the UK's second wave of coronavirus has already peaked. Professor Tim Spector, who leads the COVID symptom study app, which aims to track the spread of COVID in the UK, confirmed that there were positive signs the country has already passed the peak of wave two. Wow. The letter sent to Johnson is entitled First Do No Harm and signed by people like Dr. Charlotte Orr Bell, well-known immunologist, paediatrician Dr. Rosamund Jones, consultant surgeon Keith Willison, who's a coincidentally professor of chemical biology at Imperial College London. Wow. It goes on to say, the problem of functional false positive rates has still not been addressed, and particularly in the context of low prevalence of disease, whereby false positives are likely to exceed true positives substantially. I mean, Christ, people! It's fucking insane! The whole country knows it's a scam now! 500 of them! False positives are likely to exceed true positives substantially. And moreover, says the letter, correlate poorly with the person being infectious. It's a sham! It's a sham. The more tests you do, the more cases you get. But false positives are likely to exceed true positives substantially. So it doesn't matter. And none of these people testing positive are sick. Wait for this. In the letter to Johnson, this is the killer line, the killer paragraph. Alongside this, write the scientists, we have the issue that it is normal to see an increase in illness and death during the winter months. Wait for it. It is notable that the UK death rate is currently sitting around average for this time of year. Let me repeat again. 500 surgeons, immunologists, doctors saying the UK death rate is sitting around average for this time of year. The letter concludes the use of the second terms, the use of the term second wave is therefore misleading. It's not happening. And you had Whitty and Valance, Statler and Waldorf, Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Shaz and fucking Dave telling us that 4,000 people a day were going to die. And they knew it to be untrue. It wasn't a mistake. It was data falsification. They should be arrested now. And despite the fact that we all know this, Catherine Rushton writes in the Sunday Telegraph today that Boris Johnson's government is piling pressure on scientists to endorse a COVID vaccine before Christmas. The article alleges that Johnson wants to give a Christmas present to the nation. That's a direct quote, by the way, from the article. To come on television, presumably on Christmas Eve, and say, oh, we'll have a vaccine in January. But nobody needs the fucking thing. Why would you take it anyway? If that's not bad enough, the Sunday Times ran an article. I've tweeted both of these articles out, by the way. In the Sunday Times, it says, the tech giants, Google, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and a few others, have promised to basically eradicate vaccine skeptics from their platforms. Just as they're about to roll out a rushed vaccine into production, into the arms of the wider population, the tech giants are saying, don't worry about any skepticism because we'll get rid of it for you. It's a basket case society. Jesus. And on the vaccine, this guy, General Sir Nick Carter from the Army, Chief of the Defence Staff, he went on the Andrew Marr show, didn't he? Of course he did, just after he spoke with Ridge and he was asked about vaccine rollout.
And of course, we're all waiting just now to find out if there is going to be a workable vaccine. And if there is, how many people, how quickly are going to get it? President Trump talked about using the US military to get that across the country. Are we going to see the same kind of thing here if it happens?
We don't know yet. But the answer is that we are helping those who are doing the planning for this. And I suspect given the scale of the logistic challenge, it would be logical perhaps for us to be involved partly in what is going to happen.
Yeah. We're actually working with the people planning for this, for the mass vaccine distribution. So it makes logical sense that we'd be involved. Yes, you are now in those movies that you saw in the 80s and 90s. You'll have the army on the streets of the UK, in the UK's shopping centres, encouraging you to take a vaccine for a fucking virus that I'm not even sure exists anymore, number one. But number two, if it does do, you've got more chance of being killed by a giraffe falling out of a hot air balloon than you have of being killed by this. It's astonishing, isn't it? Right. I've got no more for you today. That's it for Sunday View. That's it for Sunday View. Full stop. We've had a good run, haven't we, on Sunday View? I can't remember when I started it. Was it 2015? Was it early 2015? We started this saunter through the newspapers and through the Ridge programme and the Andrew Marr show. It's been good fun, but it's time has come to an end. The programme will disappear as of now, and it'll be replaced by a programme every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Friday afternoons, 3 p.m. UK time. The Richie Allen Radio Show, Monday to Thursday at 5 o'clock, is untouched. That will carry on as normal. So now we're Monday to Friday instead of Monday to Thursday, and then on Sunday. So this is the last Sunday View for the foreseeable future. I'm not going to consign it to the dustbin of history just yet. There might be some call for it in the near future or in the far future. But for now, that's the end of it. It'll be on all the regular podcasts and YouTube and all of that a bit later on. Have yourself a fantastic Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. Dr. Vernon Coleman will be on the Richie Allen Radio Show tomorrow. I'm delighted about that. Vernon will be with me from about 5:30 tomorrow. We'll have a proper chat, me and Vernon. Vernon and me. And that will be interactive, of course. So if there's something you'd like to put to Vernon, you can do that. Dr. Vernon, I should say. You can do that by tweeting the programme when it's on air. Donald Trump supporters, don't worry yourself too much. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter a damn. Embrace the alternative. Embrace the reality that nothing changed in the 4 years he was there. It just got a whole lot louder. And you just got a whole lot more invested than you were previously. Divest yourself of all of that garbage. We will never get where we need to go by trusting a politician, man or woman, in any country in the world. Leaving you with one of my favourite groups and one of my favourite songs of all time. It's America and Ventura Highway. Speak tomorrow at 5. Don't miss Dr. Vernon Coleman then. Bye.